The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the December 2018, issue of the AARP Bulletin. And our programming today is generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call them at 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. We're going to start off this morning with an article from the In the News section, and this is called Underwater, written by Joe Eaton. After Hurricanes Florence and Michael battered the South, many older Americans faced devastating uninsured losses. This past summer, Teresa Seacrest left Orange County, California, to move into a small beach cottage in Mexico Beach, Florida, that she had inherited from her father. Like many Americans, she considered life on the beach a retirement paradise. Even better, the home's mortgage was paid off, so living would be cheap. Seacrest, a 58-year-old cancer survivor, tidied up the yard, did some repairs, and went to sleep listening to the waves crash on the sugar-white sand 300 feet from her door. Then in October, Hurricane Michael arrived. Seacrest evacuated to a place of safety. Days later, she returned to discover the worst. Her home was gone, reduced to a pile of rubble that was still wet from the storm surge. "My only plan right now is how do I clean up my property," Seacrest said after viewing the wreckage. "That's step one. Step two is, I don't really know step two." Seacrest doesn't think she will be able to rebuild. She did not have an insurance policy through the Federal National Flood Insurance Program, NFIP, which provides coverage to more than 5 million homeowners, condo associations, and businesses. The NFIP, which covers up to $250,000 for the building itself and $100,000 in personal property for single-family dwellings, has been a lifesaver for many in coastal communities devastated by floodwaters. But older Americans may be less likely to be covered through the program, according to experts. That's because they may be more likely than younger people to have paid off their mortgage, releasing them from any obligation to buy the coverage. And devastating storms often strike just where older residents have clustered. Flood insurance is required for homeowners in areas the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, has determined are at the highest risk for flooding, but only for those with federally backed mortgage. Otherwise, flood insurance is not necessarily required. Mexico Beach, like many other Florida coastal communities, has long been a destination for retirees. Its median age is 58, much higher than the national median age of 37.7, according to census data. Experts believe those older residents were hit hard by Hurricane Michael. Banking on hope. Many homeowners mistakenly believe flooding is covered by a standard homeowner's policy, notes Chris Heidrich, owner of Heidrich & Company Insurance and Risk Management Services in Sanibel, Florida. Others drop their flood insurance soon after their home is paid off because their area hasn't flooded before. That's risky. If you can't afford to rebuild your house out of savings, you really ought to have flood insurance, he says. But for many retirees, even subsidized federal policies at cut rates can be expensive. Rates inside the highest risk areas can be $2,500 a year or more, Heidrich says, and around $450 a year outside those areas. Many people who live outside the highest risk areas believe they don't need flood insurance because FEMA maps show they are at a low risk, Heidrich adds. Then the storm arrives. Fewer than 10% of households in the Carolinas affected by Hurricane Florence in September are likely to have had federal flood insurance, according to Milliman, an actuarial company. A Washington Post analysis of FEMA data found only 17% of homeowners had flood insurance in the Texas areas hit hard by Hurricane Harvey in 2017. Starting over will be particularly difficult for older Americans, Heydrich says. There's less time to rebuild, to rebound. Rick Moore, a 58-year-old civil engineer from Tallahassee, Florida, was lucky. He pays about $1,000 a year for flood insurance on his four-bedroom beach house in Mexico Beach, which was built on pilings to allow floodwaters to sweep beneath. Moore says he's not sure he would have kept the pricey insurance if he had paid off his mortgage. The hurricane completely destroyed Moore's house, but he's already planning to rebuild. It may be a speed bump, but we are looking forward to retiring there, Moore says. A challenged program. The NFIP has worked for people like Moore, but the program is on life support, overburdened by payouts from several major storms that brought extreme damage. It has left taxpayers on the hook for billions of dollars. It's a program that should be a linchpin in the nation's strategy to address escalating flood risks and the problem of sea level rise, says Robert Moore, a flood insurance expert at the Natural Resources Defense Council, NRDC. But in its current state, it's a liability. Before Hurricane Michael, the program was more than $20 billion in debt, Robert Moore says, and that's after Congress authorized $120 billion in disaster relief funding in 2017 and canceled $16 billion in outstanding NFIP debt. And the benefits are not spread out among policyholders. For at least 36,000 homes and businesses, the program has paid flood damage benefits more than once, according to FEMA data. Critics say the repeat payouts encourage homeowners to rebuild their homes in areas at high risk for floods, which leads to a cycle of additional claims. The process has led to stunning levels of government waste. In one case, a home in Spring, Texas, was repaired 19 times at a cost of more than $900,000, according to the New York Times. The house was valued at $42,000. A call for change. The problems facing the NFIP have led environmentalists, insurance executives, and fiscal conservatives to push for change. So far, Congress hasn't responded. In 2017, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a reform bill with a number of provisions to encourage private flood insurers to enter the market. The bill also includes rules to improve flood risk maps and forced disclosure of past flood claims to home purchasers. The Senate has not taken up the bill. I wish I could say that Congress is motivated to help people and find a fix to a problem everyone knows exists, says Moore at the NRDC. But I haven't seen anyone in the Senate step up. Joe Eaton has written for the Washington Post and the websites of National Geographic and The Atlantic. Here's a little sidebar on this, a flood insurance, a quick guide. Flood insurance is mandatory for homeowners who have a federally backed mortgage and are living in a designated flood hazard area. You can find out through FEMA if you live in such an area by searching your address at msc.fema.gov. Many homeowner insurance policies cover floods caused by a mechanical issue like a broken appliance, but not those linked to storms or natural causes. Federal flood insurance is available to any homeowner living in a community that participates in the NFIP, and most communities do participate. To get a policy, ask for a quote from your insurer or broker. Now, the cover story for this issue of Money Magazine, for this issue of the AARP Bulletin, which is the December issue, is titled Money for Life. And it is written by Jane Bryant Quinn, who is a personal finance expert and the author of How to Make Your Money Last, The Indispensable Retirement Guide. And she has been a contributor to the AARP Bulletin since 2006. And she calls this my simple, easy-to-use formula to make sure you never run out of cash. As a financial columnist, I get asked the same heartfelt question over and over. How do I make sure I don't outlive my money? And that makes sense. Surveys confirm that the number one worry among older Americans is running out of cash. Fortunately, financial planners have come up with sound ways to prevent this. Collected here are their key rules for maintaining a livable income for life, plus case studies that show how to put these general rules into action. The goal is your peace of mind, knowing that you're getting the most from the money you've saved and that you'll always have enough. The magic number. The key to long-term planning is knowing one essential number, how much money you can afford to spend annually. From there, you can adjust your expenses to fit. You may be tempted to reverse the order, estimate your future expenses, then adjust your investment assumptions to make that spending appear possible. But that's wishful thinking, a hope that big investment returns will rescue your budget. It leads to overspending early on and regret later. Instead, let's focus on the real, guaranteed money you'll have. There are two main sources: your personal savings and investments, your guaranteed income from other sources. The key steps. Step 1. Tally your guaranteed income. The most common source is Social Security, which you may already be collecting. If you're not, get an estimate by calling Social Security or by opening a My Social Security account at ssa.gov. You might also have a pension or annuity. If you own a reliable rental property, include the amount of rent you receive after expenses. Step 2. Estimate your income from savings. How much annual income can you prudently take from your savings and investments? To get the answer, there's a surprisingly simple rule of thumb. Add up the current value of your spendable assets, such as bank accounts, mutual funds, stocks, and bonds. Include both retirement and non-retirement savings. Subtract from that total a cash cushion to help cover near-term expenses. Then take 4% of what remains. That's the safe amount of your assets that financial planners say you can afford to spend in the first year of retirement without running the risk that your savings will run out. In each subsequent year, take the same dollar amount plus an increase for inflation. Example, say you have $100,000 invested plus a cash cushion. In the first year of retirement, you could spend $4,000 of that money. If inflation is running at 3%, your second year withdrawal would be $4,120, the first year amount plus an inflation increase. Follow this pattern in each future year. Under this system, known as the 4% rule, your savings should last at least 30 years and probably more. That forecast is based on the pioneering work of planner William Bengen, who tested 30-year spending rates against the historical returns of U.S. stocks and treasury bonds. Some years the markets are up and some years they're down, but the 4% rule takes that into account. As long as you keep withdrawing a steady amount of money, plus increases for inflation, you won't run out. This rule would have protected your annual income even during 30-year periods that included the Great Depression of the 1930s and Great Stagflation of the 1970s. In better periods, saving lasted for many years more. Step 3. Total your income. Add that safe 4% amount to your annual guaranteed income. For example, if you're due $20,000 from Social Security and take $4,000 from a $100,000 nest egg, you'll have $24,000 that you can safely use for living expenses, including any taxes. Step 4. Set your budget. Finally, divide your expected yearly income by 12 to get your available monthly cash. And that's it. Don't worry about inflation. Your income should keep up with inflation thanks to Social Security's cost of living increases and the annual increases you take from savings. Special factors. You're married. Calculate your spendable income three ways: once as a couple, once assuming that you die first, and once assuming that your spouse dies first. Don't skip this analysis. Couples generally get two Social Security checks, one per spouse. The survivor will get only one. If you get a pension, it too might go down or go away when you die. Each spouse should know what might change after the other's death. You're a homeowner. worried that these numbers won't fund a decent standard of living? You might want to tap your home equity. Home equity loans, however, can be hard for retirees to get. Instead, if you want to stay put, you might get a reverse mortgage, a loan against your home with no payments due until you leave it permanently. The debt is usually settled via proceeds from your home sale. Costs are high. If your house is worth $260,500, the median U.S. price, a $50,000 credit line might carry $13,000 in one-time fees. That money comes from your home equity, not your pocket. Another option, take in a renter. Or you could downsize, adding your home sale proceeds to your investments. You fear stocks. The 4% rule rests on the premise that you invest about half of your nest egg in low-cost funds, index mutual funds or exchange-traded funds that hold big company stocks and track the market's moves. The other half is in treasury bond funds. If you also hold funds with smaller stocks, Bengen says it's safe to start at 4.5%. If you avoid stocks, however, and own only bonds and CDs, 4% is too high. Your initial safe withdrawal rate is more like 3%, says economist Wade Fow of the American College of Financial Services in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania. You might also start with that number if you retire early or own individual stocks, which are riskier than market-tracking mutual funds. On the other hand, you might go higher. The original 4% rule was designed to protect you from the worst of times, says financial planner Jonathan Guyton of Edina, Minnesota. But most 30-year periods do just fine, and you might find that you're skimping while money piles up. Guyton suggests starting with 5 or 5.5%. But do that, he says, only if you have at least 60% of your investments in stocks and you're willing to cut back a little, say 10% of your planned annual withdrawal when markets fall. 5% also makes sense if you want only 20 years of income. For example, if you don't quit work until you turn 75. Now she offers a short course in tapping your savings. If you depend on investment accounts for retirement income, you'll have to pull money from them periodically to get cash for your everyday expenses. Those withdrawals will likely come from dividends, interest, mutual fund distributions, and sales of securities. But how do you pick which source to draw upon? Fix your mix. Think about the balance you want to maintain between the stocks and bonds, or stock funds and bond funds, in your portfolio. Say 50% of your money in each. If gains or losses on either side throw off your target mix by 5 percentage points or more, say to 55% stocks and 45% bonds, rebalance by selling some of the overweight investment to restore the 50-50 split, or something close. Sell tax-deferred assets. If you're entirely invested in mutual funds in your traditional individual retirement account, IRA, or 401k, pulling money out is easy. That's because no matter where you take your money from within these accounts, stock funds, bond funds, or cash balance, your withdrawals will all be taxed in the same manner as ordinary income. Reach your dollar goal by selling stock or bond shares in a way that maintains or restores the investment balance that you desire. Use taxable interest and dividends. If you have taxable accounts, such as a brokerage account that holds stocks, bonds, or funds but isn't a 401k or IRA, start out by withdrawing this year's income, interest, dividends, mutual fund distributions, and realized capital gains. Then sell stocks or bonds to restore your desired investment balance, taking out the rest of the money you need. Always be sure to sell investments that you think have the least promise. Hold off in bad times. When markets are down, think about skipping or reducing your annual withdrawal and living off the cash cushion you've already set aside. Now here's a little case study. Case study number one, worried couple retiring sooner than they'd planned. This is Karen, 61, and Paul, 65. Paul just got laid off from his position as a restaurant manager, but is starting a new part-time job. His wife, Karen, no longer works because of poor health. They've saved $250,000, half in traditional individual retirement accounts, IRAs, and half in a taxable account. They can raise their income with a strategy available to people like Paul, who were born before January 2, 1954. Karen can claim Social Security retirement benefits next year at 62. Paul, who will then be at his full retirement age, can claim restricted spousal benefits on Karen's earnings record. At a future time, say when Paul turns 70, he can switch to his own retirement benefit, which will have risen in the meantime. This double benefit, however, is being phased out. Had Paul been 1 year younger, the couple wouldn't be able to take advantage of it. For their capital to grow, they could employ a typical investment mix, half of their portfolio in stock funds and half in bond funds, after setting aside enough cash to help cover expenses for the next year or two. They might take $11,250 from their portfolio this year, then raise that amount by the inflation rate in subsequent years. Paul can go on Medicare. For Karen, they have two choices: paying for COBRA coverage to keep her on Paul's former employer's plan for the next 18 months, or shopping for coverage on their state's health insurance exchange. Karen should qualify for substantial subsidies as long as the Affordable Care Act remains in force. They might be able to avoid paying income taxes, thus stretching their dollars, by taking $11,250 in profits from the sale of securities sitting in their taxable account. Married couples filing jointly, for example, owe no tax for 2018 on long-term capital gains of up to $77,200, or $38,600 for singles. In 2018, they also have a standard deduction of $25,300, or $12,000 per person, plus $1,300 for each spouse 65 or older. If Paul's part-time paycheck is less than that, they could also draw some money from their IRAs without getting their ordinary income high enough that it would be taxed. And next, we have a short course in raising guaranteed income. You don't have to rely on good investments to improve your retirement security. There are smart ways of securing more guaranteed income that will last for life. Social Security. Many retirees start Social Security at 62 and try not to touch their IRAs until they have to at 70 and a half. But that's getting it backwards, says planner Gary Schatzky of ObjectiveAdvice.com in New York City. It's smarter, he says, to live on your savings for a few years and put off your Social Security claim. Your benefit rises by 8 percentage points a year, plus inflation, between your full retirement age and age 70. Pensions. If you're eligible for a company pension, you're often given a choice between taking the money in a lump sum or turning it into a monthly income for life, for yourself alone or for you and a spouse. Monthly incomes are usually the right answer for new retirees with modest savings and untested investment skills, Schatzky says. If you're married, choose a payout that passes 100% of your pension to your spouse for life, unless he or she is already well provided for. People with monthly pensions are the least likely to run out of money. If you skip the traditional pension and choose a lump sum, you should be an experienced investor or have a financial advisor whom you've worked with and who has already done well for you. Annuities. Have no pension? You can buy one in the form of a simple fixed annuity. Very simple, please. No added bells and whistles. You put up a sum of money. In return, an insurance company sends you a monthly check for life or for the lifetimes of you and a spouse. Before you buy, FAO advises estimating how much more guaranteed income you want. Then visit immediateannuities.com to see how much you need to invest in order to get that amount. Annuitize only part of your money. Keep the rest for emergency spending, splurges, and, if you wish, an inheritance. And so related is case study number two. Retiree living on Social Security benefits. This is Peter, who's 72. Peter is a widower who never had a company savings plan. He has $29,500 in the bank and owns his home mortgage free. His Social Security benefits cover his few regular bills. He wonders how he'll handle financial emergencies. Social Security's cost of living increases should continue to cover his regular bills for life, although he might have to adjust his spending choices from time to time. Medicaid will help pay for his long-term care. For emergencies, his small savings should stay in a safe place, in a high-yield CD, say, or a money market account. As a second source of emergency funds, he might tap his home equity, as described in the main story under You're a Homeowner. For example, he could sell the house, invest part of the proceeds, and rent an Easy Care apartment. Case study number three is City Dwellers Living Well, Marina, 65, and Billy, 67. Marina and Billy, both lawyers, plan to retire next year. Their traditional IRAs are worth $1 million. They also have $100,000 in a Roth IRA and $400,000 in a taxable account. They want to maintain their lifestyle and leave a legacy to their nieces and nephews. They decide to start by withdrawing 5.5% of their assets from savings so they can travel and entertain. They'll cut back on discretionary spending in years when stocks decline. Because Marina and Billy want to leave an inheritance, they plan to invest aggressively with 60% of their portfolio in stocks and 40% in bonds. That's riskier than a typical retirement portfolio, but over 20 or 25 years, their investments should grow at a higher rate. When their paychecks stop, their tax rate should drop. That's a good time to save on taxes by taking distributions from their traditional IRAs or converting an IRA to a Roth, says planner Jonathan Guyton. Taxable distributions could push up a married couple's taxable ordinary income to as much as $77,400 in 2018 without moving them out of the 12% bracket. We'll end with a few online addresses, websites where you can get some better information on retirement finances. First is aarp.org/retirement calculator. And then there's troweprice.com/RIC. And then newretirement.com. And then maxifiplanner.com. That's maxifiplanner.com. And IncomeStrategy.com, OpenSocialSecurity.com, SocialSecurityChoices.com, SocialSecuritySolutions.com, and MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com. Now, we have just about run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. I hope you'll listen next week and that you've enjoyed today. I am Florence Nash, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and our programming has been generously underwritten today by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call them at 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long till next time. If you have any comments, call 919-832-5138.